Welcome to Workforce RX with Futuro Health, where future-focused leaders in education, workforce development, and healthcare explore new innovations and approaches. I'm your host, Vantone Quinlivan, CEO of Futuro Health. As regular listeners to the podcast know, we often explore solutions for growing and strengthening the direct care workforce, which includes those who provide child care and services in the home for the elderly and disabled. Today, I'm excited to delve into the potentially transformative employee-owned cooperative model for this workforce with Akelina Versosa, a founder and executive director of the Filipino Workers Center of Southern California. Aki is a longtime advocate for improving wages and working conditions for this critically important workforce and has helped establish the co-op model in California. In addition to her work at the center, Aki is president of the board of directors of the National Domestic Workers Alliance and is a fellow at both Rutgers University and MIT in programs focused in equity and justice for workers. Thanks very much for being with us today, Aki.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm very excited to share all of the work that we're doing and to get into a discussion.
Well, let's get started by having you give us an overview of the Filipino Workers Center. I mean, tell us more about your mission and your members and what makes you wake up every day to do this work.
Yes. Well, the Filipino Workers Center, we just celebrated our 27th anniversary on May 1st. And Filipino Workers Center, we were founded because we wanted to actually support the leadership of Filipino workers to make their conditions better. And quickly, we saw that home care workers, caregivers, especially working on the private side of the industry, were suffering under very poor working conditions. And that many from our community were going into home care work. So Filipino Workers Center, we started to build programs and campaigns and advocacy that is all focused around transforming the long-term care industry and to build better working conditions for the workers in the industry, including making sure that workers have the same rights as other workers. So we have policy campaigns like the California Domestic Worker Bill of Rights campaign that we won in 2013 that ended 75 years of exclusion from overtime protections for nannies and caregivers. And then we also support workers to uphold their rights or protect their rights so that the law is the reality that they can experience. So we've helped on the enforcement side, doing education around Know Your Rights, as well as working together with local government agencies to help win back wages for workers. But we also saw that this wasn't enough to actually shift conditions in the industry, and that we needed to build more strategies for creating good jobs, which is how we then came to the home care cooperative development. Because even if a worker won their back wages, oftentimes there wasn't an alternative good job to move to, because wage theft is often more of the business model amongst a lot of agencies that our community are working for. And so the cooperative development is a way to create the good jobs that we want to see in the industry. And we're still advocating for more investment in care overall so that everyone can both access the care that they need as well as pay their workers what they deserve to have good working conditions.
Yeah, Aki, to make sure that our audience understand, especially if they don't come from the healthcare or home care environment, you alluded to it in terms of wage theft and overtime protection. When you talk about poor working conditions, I was wondering if you could just describe for us the condition of a typical worker.
Yeah, absolutely. So in California, we have a public side of the industry where wages are set at like a county level. But on the private side of the industry, it is kind of the Wild West. And very typically, our members who are Filipino immigrant caregivers are often receiving $5 or less per hour with no overtime, no job security, no benefits, and some that are even earning just above $2 an hour with no overtime and minimum wage. And often this is because they're working around the clock in either live-in or 24-hour shifts where they're paid a single daily wage, but they're on call and responding 24 hours a day. And there are no benefits and no job security. And even the imbalance in power that the workers experience, often they're not even able to take the paid time off that they are afforded by the law as well. Because if they call in, sometimes they're just let go.
That paints a very vivid picture of what it was like for many workers on the private side of home care. So then fast forward, you wanted them to have an option to go to, a better opportunity to go to. And so tell us more about the worker-owned co-op called Courage Home Care. What problem were you trying to solve there?
Well, we wanted to solve the place where both workers could go to have the good wages and a good working condition where they actually have voice in the running of the business, and to also include immigrants, no matter their status, in this model so that they can also share in experiencing the good jobs that we're creating. Because there is a large number of immigrant workers who are filling this need in our society. And currently, because of the illegally low wages, they're subsidizing the care that we need in our society. And the model that we're creating with the LLC model is overcoming the barriers for immigrants to be a part of cooperatives, and is creating a new model in the industry that shows that we actually can provide good jobs with above minimum wage conditions, benefits, you know, and that really provides workers not only with the compensation, but actually with the dignity that they deserve in the workplace as well.
So I see all the benefits to the worker of joining the co-op model. Can you talk a little bit about the mechanics? How is it that you're able to restructure their working arrangement?
So the way that we have the cooperative structured is that the caregivers, the workers, are all member owners, and they are earning as member owners, not as employees. They are participating in the regular operations of the business, often mostly meeting on a monthly basis, maybe more if needed, to be able to make the decisions that impact the cooperative. They also work together in care teams versus just being sent out on assignment. Yeah, and so the LLC cooperative, that legal structure allows us to structure the business in that way. Traditional cooperatives under the IRS designation require owners to have social security numbers, which then has, excluded many immigrants from being able to participate in cooperatives in that structure. So this LLC model for immigrants has actually been around for a few decades now, pioneered by both domestic workers as well as dreamers, who were in college, graduating college, but also then facing the barriers to, you know, building a livelihood for themselves. So this is something that we brought then to home care specifically to create this model.
So if there's a worker that wants to join the cooperative as a worker owner, is there a limit to the number of individuals who can join this cooperative?
There is. Under the LLC model, we can grow to, it's not a hard number, but approximately 25 worker owners per LLC. And so this is a big constraint, because if we can only create a very limited number of jobs, it's good that we can do it, but it's less impactful in terms of the industry itself. So we currently are in the process of building a new scaled model of home care cooperatives here in California. And the way that we're doing it is that we're building a sort of cooperative franchise, or franchised cooperatives in a way, but not actually using the legal structure of a franchise. What we're doing is building a tiered model where local LLC cooperatives will be member owners of a secondary cooperative. And the secondary cooperative, or the central cooperative, will provide the shared infrastructure, back office support, marketing, shared governance for all of the cooperatives, which will be one brand as well. We'll build a standard of care across all of the local cooperatives. And in addition to these functions, the central cooperative also has a component, which is a home care cooperative academy that is focused on helping the formation of new local cooperatives of this structure. And it's not actually just providing general information and training around building cooperatives or home care cooperatives, but it's actually bringing a model that's based on best practices that's built in already to the shared infrastructure, in that way, more like a franchise, so that workers can more easily be trained into the model and get into actually delivering care into the jobs and being financially viable much quicker. And so we're currently in the process of this year establishing the central cooperative, incorporating the existing LLC cooperatives like Courage into the structure. And by the end of the year, we'll be in the formation process for three new local LLC cooperatives. So this is our work to actually build a bigger model. And in 5 years, we have the vision that every metropolis of California will have a cooperative option, both for workers as well as consumers or individuals who want to access care through our cooperative. But currently, right now, we also still have room for people to join Courage.
A clarification question. So all the sub co-ops underneath this central co-op, then each one of those would have a limit of 25?
Yes.
I see. So you're growing. And then is there a concentration in geography? Of course, I'm asking because Futuro Health held a big grant with the California Department of Aging to upskill in-home workers. And those hundreds and hundreds of individuals, for example, may be interested in an opportunity like this. So I'm curious.
Well, where we're starting is first deciding finally where the first three cooperatives will be, but definitely we'll be expanding in the greater Los Angeles area. There is a cooperative HSC up in San Francisco, but there are other organizations who will be supporting the growth of a new local co-ops as well in the Bay Area. We have groups in San Jose, in San Francisco, in Oakland, and we're also looking at San Diego. PwC, we have a big membership base in San Diego and growing also in Orange County, plus a couple partners in Orange County. So these are all areas that are kind of ripe for growth in the next couple of years.
And in terms of the training that is provided centrally, it's the mechanics and the know-how to provide your own governance and to run your own 25-person cooperative. Is there also training with regards to the occupation and the profession?
Yes, yes. And so we're pairing that with workforce development training. PwC, we were a part of the CalGrows program last year to provide workforce development training. But also this year, we're partnering with Los Angeles County to actually roll out a more intensive workforce development training that integrates with the cooperative model. So we'll be training cohorts of 20 workers, individuals in cohorts over a 9-week period, where there'll be a training for 2 days a week. And one day will be classroom training, and one day will be paid on the job training through the cooperative. And the curriculum that we're developing or that we're using, one, we're partnering with PHI. We've partnered with in the past and, you know, grew out of the CHCA, the home care cooperative in the Bronx. So they're a real gold standard in home care. So we're developing that curriculum, and we're also partnering with the Alzheimer's Association of Los Angeles to build out the curriculum for building a deeper expertise around Alzheimer's and dementia care for the cooperative workers. And so doing on-the-job training through the cooperative in this program, they'll not only get the training in the actual skills for home care, but they'll also start to get the skills of actually being a cooperative owner as well. We're also including Know Your Rights, in case not everyone is going to go into the cooperative right away. Hopefully, I wish we would have room right away, but it will help equip them to have better jobs in the current industry now. And we're also, you know, we want to infuse the cooperative and the workforce development training with the values that we have around valuing care itself and how central it is to our health systems and the quality of life that we live. So part of that is like infusing the curriculum and the cooperative with our views on aging and how we understand that like the role of caregivers is not just about maintaining the minimal survivals. Of course, you need to support the activities of daily life. But this is such an opportunity that we have our elders living longer, and, you know, the growth in the population of our seniors. We're really thinking about how can caregivers positively impact quality of life for the individuals that they are supporting, and also influencing families to help on quality of life, whether it's bringing in design and modified equipment that helps with some of the pain points on independent living that an individual might have. Also building in preventative or goal-oriented care that could help maintain or grow mobility, or social connections, cognitive goals. Yeah, so we work with so many folks in coalition as well. And many of the workers themselves are seniors also. And we know that doing this kind of work and framing our work in that kind of way is not only good for those that we're supporting, but it actually creates much more satisfaction for the caregivers themselves.
I can certainly see that. And just for a moment, let me take a step back and just congratulate you on such a innovative model that supports both the healthcare workforce needs and their families, and then also supports the individuals who take on these very difficult roles. So, and I'm excited that you have figured out a model for expansion with these sub co-ops. And when you create a sub co-op, for example, Aki, is there capital investment that must be set aside in order for you to set up another 25? Is that mechanic of scaling something that you have to plan around?
Yes, absolutely. And we are like finalizing the financial model of it. But there is definitely seed capital needed as you grow a new cooperative, because there are just basics that are needed. There also needs to be a member administrator who is trained, but also is paid for the work that they're going to be doing as a member administrator. Within the model, we're actually doing a lot of fundraising right now, because for the initial building stage, and we are very confident that in a few years, however, the local cooperatives will be generating enough income to be able to support the secondary cooperative, so be self-sustaining. However, we're not sure that it's going to be able to actually pay for the growth of new cooperatives. That we may still need to be doing either investment or fundraising to raise the minimum capital needed for each new cooperative. Yeah, so there is some need for that, but because there is already so much structure built in the secondary cooperative or the central cooperative and the model that's built out, it's actually going to give us economies of scale to be able to have smaller investments needed, both in money as well as expertise. So it creates much more accessibility.
I'm sure, like, once you get to 10 of these secondary co-ops or 20 of these secondary co-ops, the cost of adding another co-op is probably goes down because you've figured out some technology leverage way to be able to support so many sub-entities. That's very exciting. So where do you think you'll be in 1 year?
In 1 year from now, we are actually targeting to have the two local cooperatives integrated into the secondary cooperative and the secondary cooperative as well as the academy to be fully built and established as entities, and as well as have three new local cooperatives already launched and serving clients. And we'll be looking and starting to recruit for the next round of three additional local cooperatives to form towards the end of 2025. Also, just to mention, what's significant about this model also is we're designing it so that it can operate in the private industry as it is now, but we're also engaged in advocacy that our public system needs to be investing more in public benefits around long-term care. And so we need to expand what we have as well as create new public benefits that create coverage for everyone. And our model of the cooperative then will be able to connect in to the new jobs that we create with the new benefits. And this way, it also solves an issue of both inclusion of immigrants, but as well as the workforce issue, because we have this growing demand for home care or long-term supports and services, but we have a big gap in the workforce to meet the needs of everyone to have the care that that many will want, especially home care to be able to age in your own community, in your own homes. And by 2030, we in California will have a shortfall of between 600,000 to over 3 million home care workers. And this is largely because of the working conditions and the inability of the industry to attract new people into this job. So it's really important that we're creating the good jobs to attract more people into the workforce.
And so let's say I'm a family that has a need to hire a worker to care for my loved one from Courage Home Care. How do I go about finding someone to provide that care?
Well, currently, if you are in the Los Angeles area, you can find Courage. And we have a website, but you can also call PwC as well. You can access care through Courage Home Care right now. And in the Bay Area in San Francisco, there is Home Services and Companions that was incubated and started by Dolores Street Mission. That is already running. You can access care through Home Services and Companions. Then hopefully in about a year, there'll be three more options as well to be able to access cooperative care. But it's really just important, I think, to know as a consumer that the conditions that your home care worker is working under also impact the quality of care that they're able to give. And the current model that has workers working around the clock for very low wages impacts how they're able to bring themselves to the work and impacts the care, as well as like having cooperative care where you have teams who are, you know, working together to provide the best care, who are accessing regular training and learning opportunities, really is also important for quality care as well.
Yes. And I can see for the workers, it would be much less isolating to belong to a team, belong to a co-op, and all would lead to my greater work satisfaction. So let's close up by asking you your thoughts on the future of care. What makes you excited about the future of care?
Well, many people describe the growth of our senior population as an impending crisis, and many people experience it as crisis because of lack of supports. But we really see it as an opportunity for us to be with our elders, to have intergenerational, you know, spaces and communities. And we're really excited about building this model to bring our values around care and this possibility to home care. This doesn't have to be a crisis if we really invest and understand the value of care and the care providers. And we're just very excited about how we can bring this model of care, of cooperative care, that will impact so many, especially women and women of color, who are largely the ones doing this work, impact how they're able to, many of them come to this as a passion, also as a calling, not just as a job. So how they can be recognized for the important work that they're doing and the impact that they have on lives, and how we can be a part of a larger momentum to really value care so that everyone is able to get the care that they need, have real options around the care that they want, and that's all built on a foundation of valuing the caregiver themselves and providing good working conditions where the caregiver can also access the care that they need and they want when they need it as well.
Well, Aki, I really enjoyed spending this session with you. I learned so much, as I'm sure our listeners will have as well. And you're doing such important work innovating in workforce development. So thank you for your leadership in this area.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
I'm Vantone Quinlivan with Futuro Health. Thanks for checking out this episode of Workforce RX. I hope you will join us again as we continue to explore how to create a future-focused workforce in America.